So this is top five models who just happen to play sports.
No, Anna Kournikova's not on the list, but, you know.
She's not?
No.
Well, then you didn't differentiate by looks very well, did you?
No, but Paige Spiranak is definitely on my list.
Oh, my God. Let me know when you're ready, boys.
Record has started.
All right, great. Well, good morning, Bob. Good morning, Wally. Welcome back to the Unrestricted.
Thank you.
Hey, happy birthday to you, my friend. 60
happy
years old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
To you. That's all we can sing.
Yeah, we're not going to sing any more than that, but Walter.
That's right. I have a sister-in-law who calls me every birthday to sing happy birthday to me.
That's cool. Does she have a good voice or a bad voice?
That's irrelevant.
Well, it's not. Okay. Well, I know you have some questions coming up later for us surrounding turning 60.
Yeah,
which
I sure
should
do.
Be very interesting.
All right.
Spurs coming off of really a bad loss last night against Houston. I hope both of you watched it. I watched the majority of it and walked away very disappointed. It was a crazy night in the NBA. Cleveland came from 20-odd down. To beat the Celtics,
yeah,
without Donovan Mitchell,
yeah,
the Celtics were 343-0, leading by 20 plus points,
and they still don't have Darius Garland, do they?
I think he played. Yeah,
he did. Okay,
but you got Boston now at 48-13, the Bucks at 41-21, the Cavs at 41-21. Who comes out of the East?
I think it's really difficult. I'd still tell you that Boston are the favorites. I like the way they defend more than any other team in the league. Number one to me in defense is that unit. You know, look, they still have to keep Kristaps Porzingis healthy for me to believe that they're going to be a real contender to win it all. But to me, they're the team with an edge up in the East and honestly in the league itself.
I like the Bucks.
I'm with you.
I like the Bucks. I like the addition this year, and I mean, I like Rivers there. I don't
like Doc Rivers.
I don't know what's to like about Doc Rivers.
He's overrated.
He's lost more important games.
Yeah, game seven.
That would be my big worry.
Than any other coach in this game, in the history of this game.
But you know how you fix that? You don't let it go to game seven.
Yeah, and you have Dame Lillard on your team. That helps, too. Look, they had a slow start under Doc, and they finally righted the ship. Dame Lillard, to some extent, to me, looks more comfortable playing for Doc Rivers than he had previously. I don't know for what that's worth. We'll see. I don't know. I don't totally trust Milwaukee yet. They still lose a lot of crappy games.
Well, then I have the same problem with Boston. I don't trust them. I trust the Bucks over Boston at this point. And the Cavaliers, I don't trust at all. They'll fold up their tent. They're not very good. The Knicks could beat them.
The Knicks are a team that might be a 5 or a 6 seed, Walter, and they could be as high as 3, really. I mean, there's so many teams packed together.
But they have to be healthy.
Currently, they're a 5 seed. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have to be healthy, 100%. But, like, regardless of what position they're coming from, 6, 5, 4, they're a team that could get out of there. I think they match up well against the top teams. And I never give the Knicks compliments, but I like this unit more than I've liked any Knicks unit they've had in my lifetime.
They could easily make the Eastern Conference Finals, but they have so many injury issues here. Don't know when OG's coming back. Don't know when Randall's coming back, if he's going to come back.
And Brunson.
Well, Brunson was just a knee contusion, so he'll be fine. But they have too many injury concerns right now, and we'll see.
You know what? But speaking of injury concerns, nobody is more concerned about their injuries than Philadelphia. I mean, do you realize mm-hmm. Philadelphia is now in a play-in game situation?
Yeah.
They've dropped to the 7 seed. Look, they're going to get Embiid back. Who knows what version of Embiid they get when he does get back, how out of shape he's going to be. It's always been a question with him, his conditioning. So, you know, look, Philadelphia looks really good on paper with Embiid back, but I'm not betting on them. And I don't think they're the kind of team that can come from a 7 seed through a play-in game and then take down one of the top teams like Milwaukee or Boston.
Agreed.
I don't see them being able to do it. Shifting quickly to the Spurs last mm-hmm. night, Alperen Şengün just tortures our man Victor Wembanyama for 45. and 16 rebounds. And, you know, this isn't the first time we've seen Şengün show out against the Spurs. He's beaten our asses this year. He really has.
And you think about it, every time that guy plays, and listen, there was a few guys here in San Antonio that thought Şengün was the pick over Primo. Obviously, they were completely right. The Spurs just totally failed in that in the 21 draft. And he pushed Wemby all over the place. And I said it last week when we first saw Gobert back Wemby all the way to the basket. You saw Şengün do that a couple of times last night. And
the difference between him and Rudy, Walter, is that Rudy really can't dribble all that well. Right?
No.
That's not what he does. But Şengün's got a great handle, great footwork, and he just abused Wemby. You see that the big, typically European guys that have that good handle, like Jokic, really give Wemby a lot of fits.
Yeah. I'll say this. Listen, Wemby's obviously developed throughout this season, and to me, this has been a successful season for the Spurs. Even though the record isn't what people wanted, but he's developed. I think you look at Vassell now differently. I think he's a keeper. I'd like to see him drive and get to the free throw line a little bit more.
Yeah.
That would elevate him into superstar status if he can do that and get his average to 25 points a game. So I like that. But here the Spurs are sitting now. They should be in that bottom three.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get another lottery draft pick. And that way you have Wemby. You have another star in the making there. You have Vassell. You have a good nucleus there. I think there's a lot to be happy with. And clearly the Spurs are improving game by game now. You could see that. They've had a couple of nice wins here. And this is a good stock to buy in.
All right, let me get critical, okay? And first, let me tell you real quick. I started my 2024 NBA draft research day before yesterday. I usually wait till this time of the year to start really looking into these guys, and I've just started that. So stay tuned for that stuff on a future episode, because at this point, I really don't know. I love the kid from Kentucky, Dillingham. I love the kid from Tennessee, Connect. For the Spurs, those guys look really good to me. But watching the European guys, I haven't gotten into that yet, and I'm fixing to. Let me get critical about the Spurs and about Wemby. I'll start with Wemby. If Wemby wants the fucking ball, he has got to become a better screener, Walter. He doesn't level anybody on screens or hold them off well enough to present himself as a great target. We criticize the Spurs, and rightly so, for not getting him the ball well enough. Well, it's a double-edged sword. Wemby has to present himself well too. And last night, rolling to the basket off pick and roll, he didn't present himself well. And the Rockets did a really good job of covering him on those rolls. And Wimby's got to become better at that. That's a criticism of Wemby that needs to improve fast. Okay, because that's how he's going to improve his touches. He only had 10 points last night in 30 minutes. That's not good enough for a guy of his caliber. Secondly,
for his size.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah. Secondly, I want to shit on Vassell for a minute. He takes more bad shots than any player I have seen in a Spurs uniform since Willie Anderson.
Well, what's his shooting percentage?
Regardless of shooting percentage, it's the shot type that he falls in love with. It's contested mid-range jumpers. I'm tired of seeing it. And he does it possession after possession. Not when they're up against the shot clock or anything like that. They're early in the clock frequently. He's got to get out of that habit. I realize that the Spurs need his scoring impact, so he needs to look for his offense. But there's a big difference between a good shot and a bad shot. And he makes bad decisions on what is a good shot far too often.
Well, listen, he's 47% shooter. I can't argue with that.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
He doesn't get to the free throw line enough, and that's where he could become a superstar and get 25 points a game.
He's settling at the mid-range, Wally.
He's at 20 now, and so, listen, I've seen enough of him. I think he's a good, he's going to be one of the nucleus players here. And I still like Sohan. It's not consistent enough for me, but we'll see. Hopefully, next season. he becomes a takes a next step up.
Well, Walt, if you're listening to the national media, the Spurs better get their shit together with Vassell and Sohan and everybody else, like right now. Because apparently, I mean, Ramona Shelburne, Von Temps, Woj, they all in the last week have made this same chirping point, which is the Spurs better adjust their timeline because Wimby's not going to be patient. I don't know where this shit is coming from. With Ramona Shelburne, I know where it's coming from because she's a Lakers honk, right? Like, and everybody would love to see Wimby in a Lakers uniform one day. That's what the NBA would love, and Nike and Hermes and everybody that sponsors Victor Wembanyama.
She is, I'll give you a Ramona Shelburne story. I ran into her going into the AT&T Center at that point, going into the arena one night. She didn't know where she was going. And she was the, she's, I'll say it, she's the rudest person I've met
really?
In sports. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No,
wow.
No thank you or anything like that for my help to get her through the arena where she had to go. Very rude.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now's your chance to hammer her. She gave a crappy take this week.
No one even knows who she is.
Need to move up their timeline.
Yeah, I don't know how patient he's going to be with the Spurs. Wow. Why did this get born all of a sudden? I don't understand that.
Where did it come from?
I don't know.
Because Victor has said from the beginning that he believes in the process.
There has to be.
That was one of the reasons he came to the Spurs, or wanted to come to the Spurs, I should say, is that he knew that it was going to be a growth process.
But there has to be something there because you don't come out and make comments about the Spurs unless they're real, because you don't gain anything by saying something about the Spurs. It's not like you're going to get, you know, you're going to irritate the entire fan base, which is going to do what for you exactly? You get 10 people excited? It doesn't matter in San Antonio. So I mean, there's got to be something to this.
Is it a self-serving attempt to keep the Spurs or to keep Wembanyama at the top of the national consciousness? Because he's playing on a team that, quite frankly, shouldn't be talked about on Sports
Center. I think that's much more likely what you just inferred, Bob, than what Walter is. I don't think anybody from Victor's camp went to Ramona Shelburne or Woj or Von Temps or any of them and said, you know, Victor's getting impatient, you know, three quarters of the way through the season. We need to get in win now mode. It's such a it's such a bunch of bullshit.
And that's not the NBA. The NBA is not a last to first season to season league. It is not.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as we made fun of the 76ers process, it's a process.
Yeah. So why did they develop this story?
I think it's what Bob is saying, Walter. I think it's to keep Victor's name at the top of the headlines because he is the future face of the league. And he's part of the story of this season. He's going to be rookie of the year. He's, if you're writing the narrative on the 23-24 season, there's a sentence in there on Victor Wembanyama.
I mean, it's still San Antonio. Nobody cares. You know, nobody in the NBA. I mean, listen, the Spurs had a great franchise for all of those years, and nobody cared. So why do people think because Wemby here is 7'4" and is an all world talent, people are going to care all of a sudden?
I think you discount how much international popularity there is to the San Antonio Spurs.
International is one thing, but not in this country. Nobody knows. Nobody knows anything about the Spurs outside of Texas. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of fans. I would agree with you there. You don't get a lot of fans from the Midwest or something like that. Yeah, no, you're right. But Victor's a draw. I mean, Victor is a draw. People tune in to watch him play, at least until he goes to the bench. I didn't realize this.
Fat lady at the circus. You want to go see him once, take your kid, and that's it? You're good.
Well, no, you're not. He is a human highlight reel.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to go to Spurs games just to see what the hell this guy's going to do that night.
And it's not once a game, the fat lady that you're inferring.
I get it, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean,
he's an attraction like the fat lady at the circus, no?
To some degree, but I just think he's a much more repeatable interest than that.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't the midget going to the plate in baseball.
But I don't think ESPN needs to dream up a story to get interest in Victor Wembanyama. I don't see why.
Then Ramona Shelburne got something from the Lakers who said, you know, Ramona, we'd really like to.
That's why I think there's something to this.
There's other people that would like to see Victor's timeline pushed up and pressure put on the Spurs. Look, let's be realistic.
But you can't. It's a story. It might be a real story somewhere, but he can't go anywhere.
Yeah, no,
he's not allowed
he's on a rookie
to.
Contract.
Yes, he's not allowed. So it's a non-story.
It kind of is. To your point, it kind of is.
So that's why I don't understand why ESPN would have dreamed this story up, because they there's nothing they can do
but
about it.
But you know what, Walter? If we review the last like 5 or 6 years of NBA history, I remember 2 years ago, everybody started putting huge pressure on the Dallas Mavericks. They better start winning now with Luka, or he's going to get impatient. I remember that story.
Yeah.
If you take it 4 years back, I remember Milwaukee better be careful or they're going to lose Giannis to New York. Remember that story?
Well,
those happened. And like, I guess this is just part of the process now that I think about it, but it's total bullshit because to your point, the timeline is wrong.
But that's a good point,
like,
though.
Guys like Luka are going to get much more impatient, much quicker with their franchise than our Victor. Mm-hmm. He's just older. It's just a function of age.
Yeah.
And what have the Mavericks done?
Nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander could make that case, too. When are the Thunder going to surround me with a winning team? Right? I mean, look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's number two in the MVP race right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's that good. He should be upset that.
But I think you make a great point that ESPN and the national media have done this before, so. Again, it's a non-story.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't make such a big deal out of it.
I don't know. The answer to all your questions is typically money. It's clickbaity, it's story, it's eyeballs.
So somebody asked me this week, hey Vex, has Victor played 40 minutes in a game?
No.
Nope. He has not. You know what his season high is?
38.
Okay. He has 5 games over 30 minutes.
He played
the entire season.
He played the entire fourth quarter the other night. So,
yep.
He was banged up a little bit. I got no problem with the way Pop has handled him and managed his minutes. No
but it
problem
is sort
at all.
Of amazing if you think about it to parlay his numbers into a per 36 or a per 48.
Yep.
I mean, that gets really tempting.
And even though he got 45 hung on him last night, he had 7 blocks.
He did. He did. He put a couple down Şengün's throat. He did. By the way, Şengün is awesome, okay? He's really good, and it pisses me off to no end that the Spurs didn't get him because how perfect. You can't find a better power forward fit next to Victor Wembanyama than that guy.
Yeah.
He's just awesome. Love
all
watching
right.
him play.
One more on the Spurs for you.
Sure.
Wemby is clearly the rookie of the year. Is he the defensive player of the year as well? And the question here is, can you put the defensive player of the year, can you give him that award for a team that is just downright awful defensively?
I think the answer is no. And I go back to when you and I had our show back in the early 2000s, Walt. And I remember Dikembe Mutombo won a defensive player of the year award on the Denver Nuggets. And I went apeshit because the Denver Nuggets gave up more points than any other team in the entire league that season. How can you be the defensive player of the year and your team gave up more points than anybody else?
And Bruce Bowen didn't win.
The
reason was is that Bruce Bowen didn't have any stats to back up his candidacy, whereas Mutombo did with blocks and whatever
and
else.
And we're still at that same spot in evaluating wing defensive talent. Walter, we still don't have a stat. The defensive player of the year goes to a big man every fucking time because you can look to blocks and rebounds.
Sure. So is it because Rudy Gobert is the favorite here by far at this point? If you look at Vegas,
and I don't even know, Walter, if he's the best defensive player on his own team.
Mm.
I think Jaden McDaniels might be the better defensive player. He is a suffocating wing defender.
I just don't know if I can give it to Wemby based on the Spurs defensive numbers
you
at this
can't.
Point. And listen, Wemby, when Wemby's on the floor, somebody told me, yeah, but when Wemby's on the floor, their defense is like top 5. I said, yeah, well, but overall, their defense is horrific.
Yeah.
And you can't give it. I don't know if you could do that. So
by points, 6th worst defense in the NBA.
Yeah. The Spurs?
The Spurs.
Then no. I'm sorry. You can't do it. Interesting that you brought that up. Did you see Gilbert Arenas' comments about European bigs not being able to play defense?
I did not.
Okay. Let me read you some racist Gilbert Arenas statements.
Okay.
And it is hard to argue that these are anything short of just severe racism. Oh, crap. And now I can't find it.
So did he bring a gun to this racist rant?
No, not this
left,
time.
He left that in the locker room.
Okay, here we go. I found it. All right. Got to put on my
glasses.
Got to put on my readers.
I'm guessing this was on a podcast.
Yes, Gilbert Arenas has his podcast.
Of course he does.
Is it called The Point Four? I don't care what it's called. Okay, he says, quote, "You go to college to learn defense. What college do Europeans go to? They have no athleticism. They have no speed, no jumping ability. They're a liability on defense. There are 150 euros in the league today. Name the top defenders. None. Just Rudy Gobert and the Greek Freak. Other than that, they're all offensive players."
Well, I didn't hear any racism in there, but that's his opinion.
I mean, it's isolationist. It's jingoistic. I wouldn't say racist.
There's some white racism in there. Okay,
say, the NBA has always thought that European bigs weren't aggressive, weren't physical, all that kind of stuff. I remember asking Greg Popovich when we were talking about during the Tiago splitter. It was actually RC. I asked RC Buford. I said, you know, what about the narrative that all big European players are soft?
And what did he say?
He just looked at me like, what the hell kind of question is that? What are you talking about?
Because it's a stupid question, Walter, because they're not soft.
Yeah, they were.
I agree with you. In the early 2000s, there was an influx of the Andrea Bargnani's of the world that were soft. But I think we have gone way past that. I don't think Rudy Gobert is soft. I don't think Victor Wembanyama is soft. I don't think Santi Aldama or even
Jokic.
Jokic isn't soft. Sengun, who kicked our ass last night, he's not soft.
No.
And the brand of basketball that's being played in Europe currently is a more physical game than the one that's being played in the NBA. Mm-hmm. There's harder fouls. There's more physicality to it. So I don't want to hear that shit from Gilbert Arenas.
He needs to update his mind a little
bit. His racism. Yes, update your racism.
I don't see anything racist in there. He may be putting, you know, labels on people, but I think he's right.
They have no speed, no jumping. Really? Look around. And by the way, not all the Europeans that are coming over here have light skin. Dude, like, I mean,
did he say they're all white?
No, but that's the point. It's like, you're going to jump.
You're making a leap there, I think.
They have no speed, no jumping ability. Does Giannis Antetokounmpo have speed and jumping ability?
Listen, he's wrong, but he's not a racist. Like,
to me, it's racist. Okay. Fuck. And I want to point this out. I want to point this out to Gilbert Arenas. Name your most recent winners of the Defensive Player of the Year that you guys can think of.
He's wrong.
Mark Gasol, 10 years ago.
Okay.
Rudy Gobert several times. Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, these guys are winning DPOYs, right? Like, those are Europeans. I mean, mm-hmm. Gasol's from Spain.
Yeah, he's
wrong.
He's wrong. He'd be right if that was 25 years ago he made that statement, but it's not, and so he's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Move on.
So why by the way, why do we care about Gilbert Arenas, what he says?
He's just typical. This is typical of him. He makes these hot takes from left field, and they're dog shit. And half the time, and Spurs fans that are out there know this, half the time he rags on the Spurs. Not half the time. Some of the time he rags on the Spurs and this, you know, like I remember one time he went off on Ginobili, Walter, that Ginobili wasn't shit, that he came off the bench, he averaged 15 points.
Stupid crap.
He's an idiot. He's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, he must be related to Steven Jackson.
Yeah. Okay. And I think he and Steven Jackson have talked together and shit on the Spurs.
That makes sense.
All right, I got a couple other things, but why don't you go?
All right, NFL free agency right around the corner. Another week to go, and you saw the running backs are the main story there that are free agents. Saquon Barkley done with the Giants. Derrick Henry Tony Pollard, Josh Jacobs, Devin Singletary from the Texans, Eckler, DeAndre Swift. All of these
That's
guys,
a lot of good players.
All of these guys have rushed for more than 1,000 yards last season. So who do you want?
I will take Saquon Barkley, sir, and I will take Austin Eckler. That would be my choice.
Okay.
In that order.
How much are you paying them? That's the question.
That's the question.
It's difficult.
That's the question.
But I would love to have either of those two guys.
Are any of those guys going to get more than $10
million? Yeah, Saquon.
Think so.
11 or 12. But not much more.
Should he?
Because that's basically the franchise tag price is 12. I think it's 12.3. Will he get more than that?
More than the franchise tag? Probably not.
I wouldn't. I think they're making I think the Giants are making the right move here. I can't pay a running back on this contract.
I agree.
Go get another guy.
I agree with you.
Draft one.
In the case of the Giants, I agree with you. They're not close to winning a championship. Saquon Barkley is the kind of guy that you want to add to a close to championship roster. If you're the Cowboys, that is absolutely the guy you go after, because Tony Pollard was a complete disappointment last season. I don't couch it any other way. And Saquon Barkley still scares the bejesus out of defenses.
Yeah, he's a home run hitter.
Yep.
He's absolutely a home run hitter. So that's the NFL. I'll give you a couple other things here sports-wise. South Florida college basketball. I just tuned into it last night. Was watching the end of the game. They're ranked number 24 in the American Athletic Conference. If you're familiar, maybe you're not. That's the same conference UTSA plays in. South Florida 16-1 in conference. Again, the same as the Roadrunners, who are currently 5-12 in conference and 11-19 overall. My point here is this. It's long overdue, folks. It's time for change at UTSA. Time to bring in someone else. I don't know if they'll ever get anything done at UTSA college basketball-wise, but it's time to try something else.
There is absolutely no reason, Walter, why UTSA shouldn't be a great basketball program. Coming out of
a great one?
Okay, sorry. Great for the AAS. Does that work for you? Like,
I don't know.
Perennially at the top of their conference. Yeah. I mean, look, you're right next to Houston. You're still pulling out of San Antonio. Dallas can come down here. It's fertile basketball grounds.
Yeah, but why play here?
I don't know. Okay.
You got to find the right coach.
Find a reason for them to come here.
And listen, when they hired Steve Henson, I was hoping that this guy would be somebody who would have the players run up and down the floor and score 120 points a night and make that the reason why you want to come here. Because there's no reason to play for UTSA college basketball wise. Why would you?
Yeah, I guess there are better programs. But South Florida
doesn't
blow you away either.
No.
It's Florida. Florida doesn't blow me away at all.
So that's the point here. You got South Florida. Who cares? But they're ranked 24th in the AAC, and so why can't UTSA make a run? So you need to give somebody else a chance and see what you could do.
Can I do a quick golf thing here?
Quick golf thing. Yes.
Last week, Anthony Kim came back to the LIV Tour for his first professional tournament in 12 years. Anthony Kim was super popular among people my age as a golfer, and then split and really never has explained why he left golf. There's rumors of it being an insurance scam.
Yeah, $2 million a year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I'll do nothing for $2 million a year.
Yeah, yeah. But if he wants to say that his story hasn't been told, I'm pretty sure it's just that simple. He got a lot of money from insurance not to play. He shot back-to-back 76s and a 74. He was terrible in his first tournament back. I don't expect it to get a whole lot better for him. It's just too much time away from the saddle. Aww. And speaking of the LIV Tour, Paul Azinger, former NBC lead anchor for the PGA Tour,
right,
took a shit on the PGA Tour this week and also took a shit on NBC, calling the guy who fired him a complete asshole. Which is interesting because Azinger is super Christian, like super, super duper. Sad day for golf, says Paul Azinger, as he says the best players aren't all playing PGA tournaments. That's over. Suddenly, the LIV Tour, let's just say it like this, the PGA Tour has fast become the qualifier for LIV, and it's a sad day for golf.
He's wrong. Wow.
That's a little extreme, pal. Scottie Scheffler is still the best player on the planet, and he's still on the PGA Tour.
And I don't, and nobody watches LIV Tour for the most part.
Yeah.
You're still, well, I shouldn't say nobody watches it, but if given the choice between the PGA Tour on TV or the LIV Tour, you're watching PGA Tour. And that's just the way it goes.
And nobody,
until further notice.
And actually, nobody is going to these tournaments either in some of these other countries. I heard a story from a guy who was at one of the Saudi events, and he was like, I was there with my kid. I could get anyone's autograph. No lines, no nothing.
That's maybe an advantage. Yeah.
All right, let me give you another college basketball one. Caitlin Clark.
Oh, God, I loved watching her this week.
I said before, I think it was last week, I said that I wanted to see her play live. I would pay money to see her play live. But let's get one thing straight. She is not going to change the way the majority of U.S. sports fans view women's college basketball. Nothing's going to change. This sounded a lot like, you know...
the soccer conversation from 1985.
Name the soccer guy. This is going to change soccer forever. It's going to be... No, it's not. Women's college basketball is not going to be in the mainstream. It's just not. Just enjoy it for what it is. And that's what it is.
She is the most recognizable college basketball player in the country right now.
Yep.
Do you agree with that?
We said that last
week. No question.
Yep.
Okay. But you're right. It's not going to move the dial. It's not going to change. It's going to change it a little bit, maybe a little bit of a bump, and we'll see if they can capitalize on it.
And it goes away.
Let's give her credit where it's due, though. She had the largest women's college basketball audience in 25 years.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And the second largest in college hoops this season, men's and women's. Now, here's what, to your point, Walter, I don't think all of a sudden Caitlin Clark's entry into the pantheon of interesting athletes, interesting female athletes, means that we're all going to start watching the WNBA. I'm not saying that.
Not going to happen.
I am saying this. If every player in the WNBA was as good and as exciting as Caitlin Clark, we would watch the WNBA. Yes, we would.
Okay.
Okay. And that's
maybe
she's an outlier right now, but she is a trailblazer.
She's the female version of Steph Curry.
Yes, she
is. That's all there is to
it. She's trailblazing it. And that means 20 years from now, there's going to be more than one Caitlin Clark. And that means women's college basketball and women's professional basketball has a really bright future.
In that aspect, maybe she can, maybe it can change in that. All of a sudden, now we get a bunch of Caitlin Clarks that are hitting threes from, you know, the third row.
Yeah,
and if that happens, then she has changed the game, similar to the way Steph Curry has, and maybe all of a sudden we do start watching it. But it's 10 years down the road, so we'll see. But
the thing about Caitlin Clark is, yeah, she can shoot from anywhere and she'll hurl it up. She's just as good of a passer and a distributor of the ball.
No question.
She's awesome.
She's
great.
She's all around.
Yeah. I mean, she makes nifty layups. She's great with the handle. She does a lot of cool stuff.
And you think about this. I mean, here she is. She's tops in the sports world. You got Taylor Swift, who rules the music and entertainment world. And then you got, whether you like it or not, Nikki Haley has won two primaries in the last couple of days.
Let's not make a big deal of that.
We need to watch out. We need to watch out, boys. Maybe this is becoming a woman's world.
I think it always has been.
That's maybe true. So that made me think of this week, our new top five list. This is something we started last week. So who would be in your top five female athletes of all time?
All right. You want mine first?
Well, I couldn't figure out. I said, how am I going to differentiate between these people? What's going to be the deciding factor? So I made it looks.
You got to be kidding me.
No.
So
you went with looks, you fucking chauvinist.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is top five models who just happen to play sports.
No, Anna Kournikova's not on the list, but you know.
She's not?
No.
Well, then you didn't differentiate by looks very well, did you?
No, but Paige Spiranak is definitely on my list.
Oh, my God. All right, go on with your list.
All right, so.
This is so sexist.
Top five female athletes of all time. Caitlin Clark. Paige Spiranak. Lindsey Vonn. Lindsey Vonn's the best women's skier we've ever had in this country.
Yeah,
Simone Biles.
I know you give a big shit about alpine skiing. I know.
I don't. During Olympic time, I watch it. Simone Biles, best Olympian the United States has ever produced.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, no, she's not?
No.
Best gymnast?
Best gymnast maybe, but don't go and make it the best Olympic athlete of all time, because I got one that'll kill her.
Michael Phelps?
No.
Jim Thorpe?
No, in the female ranks. We'll get to my list in
all
a little
bit.
Who's your
sorry.
Fifth?
It's all,
who's your
oh, fifth? And by the way, my fifth one is Gabriella Sabatini, the tennis player.
You just liked her nips. You told me that before.
She was hot back in the day. She's not hot anymore, but that's the way it goes.
And as I was thinking about this, I was trying to not do exactly what he just did, which is be so focused on what I've just seen. Recency bias. You have only one player in there, one athlete who like predates your oldness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. All right. So
you want me to give you mine?
Crapped on my list. Okay.
Nancy Lieberman.
Okay.
She was the first female, I believe, to be drafted by an NBA team. Okay. Serena Williams, I think that's obvious and goes without saying.
No question.
I have Simone Biles as well.
Okay.
I have Babe Didrikson Zaharias.
Okay.
And Caitlin Clark.
Okay.
Babe Didrikson not only won like 60 golf events, but she had two Olympic golds and a silver, I want to say, in track and field. I mean, she was one of the premier athletes of her era. And just gets forgotten about.
And then, my list is much more exciting than yours.
And then she battled cancer and came back from cancer and was still successful.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was on my list as well.
She had a black eye once too, I think.
Okay.
Sorry, Bob.
So this is hard for me.
Bob
so,
looking like a raccoon for you listeners out there today.
Yeah.
Major black eye.
Yeah, well, Chinese cage fighting. Don't try it. So
racist.
I mean, as to the best athlete, I think you almost have to go into track and field, okay. whether it's men or women. So for me, Babe Didrikson, also Jacqueline Joyner-Kersee.
Oh, good one. Okay. Yeah.
So talk about domination in a sport, Katie Ledecky. Okay. And yes, that is a little bit of recency bias.
Yeah.
None of you mentioned, you mentioned Simone Biles. What about Nadia Comaneci?
Yeah, she was excellent.
Hideous.
Oh, God, Walter.
Well, you remember the scene in, was it, I guess it's the open of Wide World of Sports when Nadia Comaneci is on the beam and she and turns her head and she looks at right at the camera and go, my God.
And then my final one again, dominance in a sport, Bonnie Blair.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Though I do
speed skating.
Though I do have an honorable mention.
Okay.
Athlete, excelled at what she did, really went out of the box in her thinking.
Sport. Let's see if we can name
Olympic
who it was.
Olympic athlete in the winter.
Okay.
Tonya Harding.
Wow. Not good and not good looking.
You guys are just assholes. I got to be honest with
you. That's okay.
All right. You got a big finish to point us to?
A big finish?
I got a couple of things real fast. I saw this morning that not only was LeBron James inquired about at the trade deadline by the Golden State Warriors,
yep.
He was also inquired about by the Philadelphia 76ers. Holy shit, that would have been interesting.
You got a call.
Yeah, you got to make that call.
You got to make the call.
Yep.
Oh, you done?
Yep, that's okay. All I got.
All right, let me give you a couple one here.
I got one more. This is the funniest one.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you see what Brock Purdy said this week?
No.
He was responding to 49ers fans saying that they invented the phrase Big Cock Brock to refer to him.
I did see the story, okay.
And Brock comes back and says, no, that's not true. I've been known that way since high school. My gym coach called me that.
Wow. All right.
Why is his gym coach calling
him that? I don't
know.
Repress that state. Memory, Brock. Repress.
Wow. All right. Big There's Brock that. Brock. And you got on me for naming the female athletes I had on my list? Really?
All right.
Okay.
Carry on.
All right. Let me give you a couple of ones here. Super Tuesday last night. It's been Trump versus Biden from day one. We all knew that. I don't see any big thing there.
The lesser of two evils is the evil of two lessers.
Yeah, okay. I can go with that. I saw Emmett Smith scream about the elimination of the DEI jobs at the University of Florida. That is diversity, inclusion, and equity.
Equality.
Yeah. Thank you. All I can say about that is this is what happens when you vote for old white GOP candidates. You get people who want the end of those things, and that's what Florida has. That's who they put in office. That's what the governor is, and that's what he wants. And that's what happens.
So I always thought that Jeff was going to end up there as he went to retirement. So what's the new state for you to go to?
It's not Florida. It might not even be in the United States. It might be New Zealand.
I would. If I was picking up and moving, my next move would be across the water somewhere. Absolutely. What else I got to give you here? I got one more for you, I think. Okay. Oh, a couple more. I saw that Johnny Manziel talking about he's going to boycott the Heisman Trophy celebration until Reggie Bush gets his trophy back. As he said, doesn't sit right with my morals and values. I thought, you got to be kidding. So the question that's out there is, was Manziel making a joke or was he serious?
I bet he was serious. And here's where it becomes a joke. Since when does anybody care about you, Johnny? And since when do you care about other people?
And when did you have morals and values?
Well, he said in a follow-up tweet, morals and values are something that every single Aggie is ingrained with from the second that you step on campus. I chose not to accept that fact until recently, but moving forward, I will hold myself to a higher standard that will go over a lot of y'all's heads.
If you're talking about the Corps of Cadets, I agree with you, Johnny. If you're talking about your football team, not quite so much.
Oh. That is just a laughable statement.
Yeah.
And does he really think he's going to stiff arm the downtown athletic club into giving the Heisman Trophy back to Reggie Bush?
He's got a lot of people that are backing that they would like to see that happen. And I'm with him. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, last one. I turned 60 on Monday.
Oh, boy.
Happy yikes.
Birthday. Don't look a day over 61.
No, I look. I think I look.
60 is the new 80?
Yeah.
Jackass. I get two questions for you. At what age are you actually old?
Depends on whose perspective it is.
So
my 8-year-old thinks I'm ancient. Thinks I am ancient. And I remember being 8 or 10 or 12 years old and looking at my parents and their friends and thinking they were ancient.
A lot of has to do with the color of your hair. I remember running into some kids and they said, you're old. I said, why do you think I'm old? Well, because your hair is gray.
Yeah.
Your beard is gray.
That's a giveaway.
I said, okay. All right. So I need to change that. So
no,
I've been coloring my beard since.
You're not old until you're not doing something. Until you're just kind of existing. Like, if you're doing something, going and playing golf every day, going to, you know, whatever, going, doing something, being out there, even if it's work or whatever, doing something. Once you stop doing something, then you're old.
I get that. But if somebody says to you, oh, well, he's 65, he's old. Is somebody going to say to me, or is somebody going to characterize me as being old at the age of 60?
Yeah, certain people are.
Yeah, he's old.
Absolutely.
Well, we know you, so yeah.
My dad turned 80 the day before you turned 60.
Okay.
And he's active, very active.
But he's old. He's old at 80. Regardless of how he feels, how he is physically, at the age of 80, you're old.
Do you know what's interesting? I don't think of him as very old.
Okay.
I really don't. And I had grandparents who lived to 100, and maybe my perspective is skewed because of that. But when I tell people that my dad is 80, they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
My father's
88.
And a lot of people realize that we have to realize that a lot of people lose their parents when their parents are in their 60s.
Sure.
And so it does sound almost far-fetched to hear about somebody in their 80s.
I saw this is a little bit morbid, but at what age would you say, damn, he died early? He died too soon. What age does that happen? It's got to be before 70. But is it, if a guy dies or a person dies at 70, did you say, wow, they died pretty early?
No, not at 70. I don't say that.
69, you would.
No.
I think it's like 65.
I mean, 65?
I think so.
For me, it's...
This is a horrible question.
I mean, it's...
That's it, 65?
Under my existence.
It's 59 and under for me. I mean, once you start to hit 60... I mean, how
wait a minute. At 60, I've lived a full life. Is that what you're telling me?
No, no. It has nothing to do with you leaving.
If I die tomorrow, Bob, are you not going to say, boy, he died early? Way too soon.
No, I'm going to say you died.
Son of a bitch, I'm out of here.
Like and subscribe, folks.
How y'all feel out there? Do you feel good? I said, do you feel good? Come on.
The groove feel good when it make you move. Make your next move your best move.
Uh-huh.
I said, the groove feel good when it make you move. Make your next move your best move.
Uh-huh.
It feel good, don't it? It feel good.
Uh-huh.
It feel good because you know it's good.